On the show today, I'll be talking with two really fine Irish musicians, and I mean Irish as in they are from Ireland, and they do play traditional Irish music. They're going to be in Champaign tomorrow night performing in the Piper's Hut Concert Series at McKinley Presbyterian Church in Campus Town. And I'll be talking with them, hearing some of their latest recording in the first half of the show. And then in the second portion of the program, I'll talk with Steve Larson, who's music director of the Champaign-Urbana Symphony Orchestra. They're collaborating with the East Central Illinois Youth Orchestra in Dvorak's New World Symphony on Saturday night, and with the internationally renowned young violinist Han Bin in music by Sarasate on that concert. A nicely varied program, and we'll talk about that in the second portion of Live and Local today. WYLO is the source of NPR news and classical music for listeners all over Central Illinois, and of course much more music on this program as well. Our spring pledge drive begins Saturday, April 9th. Support from listeners like you is the single most important source of funding we have, especially these days. We're encouraging listeners who are committed to supporting this service to call in with their pledge of financial support or to give online now at willpledge.org. Those were a couple of jigs, the Tenpenny Bit and Art O'Keefe's, from a disc called The Living Stream, featuring fiddler Matt Kranich and button accordion player Jackie Daly. Both of them are considered among the finest players of traditional Irish music today, and they are going to be performing tomorrow night on the Piper's Hut Concert Series, which is based in Champaign-Urbana. And for those of you who may actually be aware that they're coming, it's important for you to also know that the location where they're going to perform has been changed. There's been a pretty good response so far, and so the performance will be at McKinley Presbyterian Church in Champaign. It's the corner of 5th and John Streets. And so that is the venue, very reasonably priced, and some really fine music is in store. They're with me right now. They're actually in between gigs in Chicago and St. Louis, and then they'll be in Champaign with us on Friday night. Thank you both for stopping in on what's, at least at the time we're recording this, it's just a gorgeous day.
Thank you very much.
You got very lucky for weather right now.
I think so, yeah.
Yeah. So you're described as being interpreters of a tradition of instrumental music that comes, I guess, from a region of Ireland called, and you coached me on this, I'll do my best, Sliabh Luachra.
Yes, Luachra. Very good, very good.
Is that all right?
Yeah.
Where is that region, and what's unique about it musically and culturally, for that matter? Matt?
Okay, Sliabh Luachra is on the borders of northwest County Cork and east County Kerry. It encompasses villages and towns like Ballydesmond, Guinea of Willa, and so on. So it's on both sides of the border. In former times, the locality was renowned for Gaelic language poetry and Gaelic language poets. Two of the most preeminent poets in that tradition, it came from that district, Eoin Rua O'Sullivan and Eagán O'Rahilla. But with the demise of the Irish language as a living language, I suppose that tradition died out, and the music seems to have taken over, and music and dancing. So it's an area from which a lot of great musicians have come, and there were famous music teachers there like Tom Billy Murphy and Paddy O'Keefe. And associated then with that music tradition are specific kinds of tunes like slides and polkas, which feature predominantly for the dancing of the quadrille sets in the locality.
What kind of sets?
Quadrille sets. And also then, I suppose, a style of playing. There's a very obvious musical dialect there, which differs from the musical dialect in other parts of Ireland. So it's very regional in that sense, and very localised in that sense. But of course, in the present era, I suppose, with the mass communication and so on, you have people who are interested in this music and who don't necessarily live there, whereas in the past 40 or 50 years ago, people who played this music grew up within that community, and that was their musical expression, so to speak. But nowadays with CDs, people everywhere can hear this music and so on.
So is this a style that people are very likely to be very familiar with without necessarily knowing that that's where it comes from or that's what the style is?
I think you're right. To a great extent, the this locality features slides and polkas, of which we'll hear some polkas later. But the slides and polkas are very, I suppose, indigenous to that locality on the one hand, but on the other hand, people outside the area will recognise the music as originating from there. But still, it has a much wider appeal now because of the widespread availability of recordings and CDs and radio programs and so on.
And so some of the people who grew up there have taught other people who have taught other people who have influenced other people, and so it's become really pretty prominent style mainstream, or is it still distinctive from what many others play?
I think it's distinctive. Like other musics, I suppose, there was a trend maybe 20 or 30 years ago, particularly towards homogenization, maybe even kind of competition style, if I can put it like that, and so on. But I think that people have kind of realized the value and the worth and the beauty of something that's local. And now throughout Ireland, we have a great emphasis on people who are interested in, let's say, Donegal style music, or in a Connemara Shannon singing, or in our style of Sliabh Luachra music, and so on. So I think that there's an increased awareness of the intrinsic worth which diversity and difference has.
You mentioned the demise of the Irish language. Can you talk about that a little bit? I mean, I think I've heard that this is true before, but I don't know how many of our listeners actually know that there's been a demise. Is it just not spoken much at all, or what?
Well, English is the working language in Ireland, and has been for quite a long time. A small number of people speak Irish. Mostly these people are now confined to what are known as the Gaeltacht areas, the Gaelic-speaking areas, and they're situated for the most part along the western seaboard, on the Atlantic seaboard. In Donegal, there's a Donegal Irish dialect, there's a Connemara Irish dialect, and then there's Munster Irish. And within that Munster Irish, there are maybe three subdivisions. But outside of that, the vast bulk of the population speak English. So Irish as a language, as a working language, is in decline, even though some would say that it's holding its own. But certainly in terms of a normal, everyday spoken language, it has gone a long time. When I say that the language declined in the Sliabh Lochra area, I'm talking about the early 1900s or even before that, you know.
So it's been this is no new phenomenon.
Yeah.
I couldn't help when you said that these people who speak the language are confined to these areas. It almost sounds like they've been shuttled off to these areas. If you want to speak that Irish, then go there.
Well, no, it's not quite that, but I know how they could be interpreted that way.
It sort of almost reminded me of American Indians being pushed onto reservations, but it's not like that.
Yeah.
You mentioned reels, of course, slides and reels, which are played in other parts of Ireland, but it's a distinctive style of slides and reels.
Yeah, the way in which all the tune types are played are distinctive to that region, in the same way that if you go to Donegal at the north of the country, that the way they play jigs and reels there is very recognisable as being unique to that place. But in addition to the way of playing, there's a repertoire of tunes, and particularly slides and polkas.
Oh, yes.
You'd agree with that, Jackie?
Oh, without a doubt.
Yeah.
The ones that are played all over Ireland would be more jigs, reels and hornpipes. Slides and polkas would be much more Sliabh Lochra type fare and wouldn't be known half as much.
Yeah, when I said slides and reels, I misremembered. So slides and polkas,
yes.
Which actually leads us to our next bit of music. A couple of polkas off your CD, The Living Stream. It's Jackie Daly, who's the accordionist, and Matt Kranich, who's the fiddler here. Gulan, is that how you say it?
The Gulan, yes.
It's Gulan
polka. It's a place name, yeah.
In Ireland?
Yeah.
Yeah, and the Blackwater polkas. Is Blackwater also a place?
Yes. In fact, it's the river going through the middle of Sliabh Lochra, Blackwater.
How convenient.
Yeah, there you are now. You wouldn't get it if you wrote away first.
Matt and Jack, you're going to be on the Piper's Hut concert series tomorrow night at McKinley Presbyterian Church in Champaign. And the concert starts at 8 o'clock tomorrow night. You're listening to Live and Local on FM 90.9. Thank you. the Gulan Polka and the Blackwater Polka, sorry, from Matt Kranich Fiddle and Jackie Daly Accordion. Their disc is called The Living Stream. You can get it on CD Baby online and elsewhere, I think. And they're going to be tomorrow night on the Piper's Hut Concert Series, performing at McKinley Presbyterian Church in Champaign. The concert starts at 8 o'clock, and that is a location change in case you are plugged in or at least semi-plugged into the series events. It was going to be at a Heartland Gallery in Urbana, and audience has already grown out of there, so it's a nice place to hear all kinds of music at McKinley. Jackie and Matt are with us right now here on Live and Local on FM 90.9. I wanted to ask you about the title of the CD, The Living Stream, which actually refers to the continuity of traditional Irish music, doesn't it?
It does, but in fact, it's a tune that I composed, and I'm into fishing a lot, and the little river, that's known as the Glasha, and the Glasha Bui means the live stream. And when I mentioned to Matt the fact that I had composed that tune, I'd like to have it called Glasha Bio, he suddenly thought, wow, that's a good concept, because it could be a concept of the music being alive and being passed down from generation to generation.
Which is how Irish traditional music is in fact passed down.
Yes,
I mean, nobody
is.
Writes it down typically, or I guess people do write it down sometimes, but it's not going to sound the same if you just read it off the page if you were taught it
definitely
traditionally.
Definitely.
So what's the process like of learning a new piece?
Now, when I was young, the process was this. There was no tape recorders when I was young, which was back in the early 50s. So what I had to do is I went to a local crossroads platform where they played for dancing, and I'd sit down there, and when the tune would come up, I'd start idling it. And it was about 2 miles outside town. And then on the way home, I'd idle it the whole way home. And then I'd take out my accordion and play it.
Didle it?
Yeah. Didle-lay.
Oh, okay.
It's didling. That's what we call didling.
So it makes a lot of sense now that you demonstrate it.
And then when tape recorders came in, of course, we used them as well to get the tunes. But we also do use written tunes, because there's some great collections that have been around for a long time.
And then, but obviously you've got to make it sound other than as if it had been written down. You've got to adapt.
Yeah, but when you're from an area and when you're ensconced so much in that music, you can read it and you'll know what it should sound like.
The almost all of the tracks on this CD are unaccompanied.
Yes.
Meaning that it's just the melody. It's just the two of you playing the same melody.
Yeah.
Why not? I got two questions really around that. Why no accompaniment, except on a couple of three tracks? And then why not just have a fiddle tune and an accordion tune? What's the advantage to actually playing together?
Well, that's a good question. There is no answer to that, because you can. We both have solo albums as well, so it's not a question of us doing it like that all the time. But traditionally in that area, it was very common for two musicians, like, for instance, Julia Clifford and Dennis Murphy. They were brother and sister. But their CD is all of just the two of them playing together, and it's perfect. In fact, it's a classic. And the fact that there was no accompaniment, that can be very nice, because you can express an awful lot more, actually, when there's nothing behind you. If you know what I mean, it makes it more uncluttered. You really hear the melody and the way it's being played more.
Well, you're obviously going to hear the melody because there's nothing else there.
Yeah. But, I mean, that's part of our tradition all over Ireland. Playing of slow airs was always on your own, for instance, no matter where you were in Ireland.
But the Sliabh Luachtra tradition generally is unaccompanied?
Nowadays, it's accompanied a lot more than it used to be, but it did not used to be. In all the other traditions, it was very popular to have a piano in the old days, and to have a boron, and to have guitars, but not in Sliabh Luachtra. For some reason, people just... And the dancing as well, the dancers liked to make all the beat rather than having any other beat involved. if you know what I mean.
They produce the beat how?
With their feet.
Oh, with the feet.
By stamping it out when they're doing the dance steps.
Well, I thought I detected when listening to some of these tracks ahead of time that there was a little bit of tapping going on, because it's hard to help yourself, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. Mm. We don't mind that if there's a little bit of your foot stamping. What about it? It doesn't do any damage, really.
Do you ever play on a stomp box? You know, a box that actually resonates your...
I've seen it in Canada. We have never done it. It's not part of our tradition at all, but I've seen it being done a lot in Canada.
Do you ever think about adding it to your tradition?
No.
You just couldn't handle that?
As Seamus
emotionally?
As Seamus Ennis said about playing the boron, he said, you know, it's played with your hand or with a stick, but Seamus Ennis said, the real way to play a boron is with a penknife.
With a penknife?
Yeah.
Carve it up and chuck it away,
exactly,
right?
Exactly.
The boron is the Irish drum.
It is, yes.
And you were telling me while we were listening to those polkas that it's difficult to find somebody to play it well.
It is, especially polkas, because you're used to giving a even distribution of the hand when they're hitting it. So when they have to count out a three instead of a four or a two, they find it difficult.
So the you have the stick.
Yes.
It's hard to describe. You sort of place, it's like if you took a pencil and held it with all four fingers and just sort of went back and forth.
Yes.
Twist your wrist.
Yeah.
I don't know if this is coming across visually or not. That's kind of how you play.
That's right, sure.
And that's hard to do in three?
It is, because they're used to giving one, two, one, two, one, two. So, you know, that's different. There's a single beat as well as a double. And it means if they find it much more difficult to bring that beat out.
I actually love the sound of the baron, especially, and this is maybe sacrilege, especially when it's amplified a bit. I'm not usually into much amplified music, but there can be something really viscerally exciting about the drum in certain kinds of music.
Oh, if the player is good. I played in a great group way back in the 70s called De Damon. And the baron player, Johnny Ringo, we called him, and he's astonishingly good, and he sounded fantastic. But as I said to you, an awful lot of players, everybody thinks, oh, this is easy, I'll do that, no problem. You know, and they bring it into a session and ruin it.
Well, I had my own experiences playing a couple of small percussion instruments, and I very quickly found out that hitting a couple of cymbals is not as easy as it looks.
No.
You know, it's so easy to do wrong.
Oh, yeah. And there's very few people have that really instinctive great rhythm, you know, that it's hard to find.
How much do you both, Jackie and Matt, play in bands currently as opposed to doing solo and solo unaccompanied?
Well, I suppose we each have a history of playing in groups and bands of various sizes. My most recent group scenario was with a band called Sleeve Notes, and that involved accordion, myself and fiddle, and guitar and singer and so on. And Jackie would have done that with his most recent band was Patrick Street, in which there were four or five people. And over the years, we each would have played in larger ensembles, indeed even Kelly bands that you might have 8 or 10 people and so on. So we're familiar with all of that, and I think maybe as a contrast to all that big sound, so to speak, sometimes with guitars and bouzouki and baron or piano, as the case may be, as a contrast to all that, being able to do what we've done on this recording, have the pure unaccompanied fiddle and accordion, and certainly within the Sleeve Notes tradition, that kind of aesthetic is very strong. And while I know you hinted a while ago that we're both playing the same melody, I think it's more complicated than that. Sometimes there are octave things going on. One of us will play down the octave, and that's you know, fairly idiomatic of that music. And as well as that, the kind of interplay which goes on, not so much from the note point of view, but the accentuation point of view, this kind of infrarhythmic variation, if I can call it that, that goes on within the notes and so on, this kind of pulsation effect, and the idiomatic ways of performing it. The notes are only a small part of all of this. It's the hidden stuff, I think, that really gives a beauty to this music. So all that's going on at a deeper level, and without accompaniment, as Jackie mentioned a while ago, you can hear all this level of detail, which I think when there's accompaniment involved, it can tend to mask it a small bit. That said, I love playing with accompaniment as well, and we feature accompaniment on, I think, three of the tracks here, so we're not averse to having accompaniment. It's just that we wanted to explore the other idea more so in this case.
Well, since you have confessed that there are three tracks that have accompaniment on here, let's hear one of those. It's towards the end of the disc. It's called The Living Stream with Matt Kranich and Jackie Daly, and it's a combination here of barn dances.
Yeah.
Here we go. Green Mountain Boys and Light of the Moon, the name of those two dances, barn dances from The Living Stream, the name of the disc, with fiddler Matt Kranich and accordion player Jackie Daly. And so what I was asking right before we played that, I wasn't aware that barn dance was in the Irish tradition. I just think of a barn dance as being kind of an American thing for some reason or another. When I was a kid, we used to go to barn dances, which had nothing to do with this kind of music. It mostly had to do with flirting and making out in the back of a hay wagon or something like that, but this is a particular style
It's a particular type of tune, and it's a bit like a hornpipe, but it's more bouncy than a hornpipe. But it's a popular dance, a barn dance. It goes way back in the 20s. There was loads of them recorded as 78s by different musicians.
And you were telling me while we were all listening to this in the background that you actually got this from an old 78.
I did, yeah. There's a record company in New York called Shanachie Records. It's an Irish.
Yeah, right.
And the guy, Dan Collins, who runs that, he collects an awful lot of great old music, and he gave me the 78, and I fell in love with it straight away and learned these tunes. And the people who done them were called the Lynch family, were the name of the people who recorded them on 78.
And this originated, the tune originated in New York?
We don't know. It's impossible to say, because they might have got it in Ireland before they came over or something. It's impossible to say at this stage.
Well, somebody was telling me recently that the Irish tradition almost left Ireland, came to the States, and then went back in a sort of revival of some kind.
Mm. Yeah, it did, but that's mostly Sligo music, for instance, and Michael Coleman. That didn't happen with lucre music at all.
It just never left.
It never took off. There was only one. You could only name one or two good Sleeve Lucre musicians who were over here for many years, Johnny Cronin and Paddy Cronin. There's not many more.
The Sligo people, and I suppose the most notable among them, were Michael Coleman and James Morrison. And Coleman came in 1915, I think, and Morrison maybe 1914, came from Sligo to the United States, and they made quite a lot of 78 recordings in the 20s and 30s in New York. And a lot of these recordings were sent back home. People either going back to Ireland, or people who had come over to live in the States sending them back as I suppose parcels to the people at home. So in a way, the music at home then the musicians at home tended to look up to these recordings which came from America, and in a way Coleman in particular and some of the other musicians became iconic, certainly, and their versions of tunes became kind of a standard to an extent to which people should aspire in their playing. And in a way this made the continuation of the local styles, the more regional styles, a bit more difficult. There was the man has passed away now, but in West County Clare, Patrick Kelly once said that the worst thing that happened to the West Clare style of fiddle playing was the appearance of Michael Coleman's recordings. So you had that phenomenon taking place as well. But despite that, the local indigenous styles, I think, have continued and to an extent have thrived, and people, now you'll find more younger people with a greater interest in expressing the local voice or the local accent, I think.
Well, of course, Matt Cranish and Jackie Daly are doing their level best to continue that tradition and teach it to other people as well, not only through recordings and performances, but also quite directly. And they're going to be at McKinley Presbyterian Church tomorrow night at 8 o'clock on the Piper's Hut Concert Series. That is a location change, for those of you who have been aware of this concert coming up. And if you want more information on the Piper's Hut series, you can go to pipers-hut.com, and they've got other concerts coming up, including Sarah McQuaid on the 3rd of May and the Paul McKenna Band on May the 10th. And coming up next on Live and Local, a conversation with Stephen Larson, who's conductor of the Champaign-Urbana Symphony Orchestra. They're giving a concert at the Krannert Center in Urbana on Saturday night. And let's go out with another accompanied tune. It's actually the final set of reels on this disc, The Living Stream, and we should give credit to the other folks who are joining you on this, one of whom I'm guessing is related to you, Matt?
Yes, my sister, Breed, plays the piano, and Paul DeGray plays the guitar.
And these are Craig's reel, and it just says Hickey's. Does that mean Hickey's reel?
No, it means two tunes.
It means what?
Two tunes.
Oh, two tunes.
Yeah. Two of Hickey's.
All right.
Two
Hickey's reels, so...
two tunes with the same title.
At the same title. All right. Well, appreciate your joining us on the show. It's been great to have you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much indeed.
It's Live and Local on FM 90.9. Cranage and Jackie Daly here on Live and Local on FM 90.9. Go out and hear them at McKinley Presbyterian Church in Champaign tomorrow night at 8 o'clock on the Piper's Hut Concert Series. Today's broadcast on FM 90.9 is made possible with support from Kennedy's Restaurant next to the Stone Creek Golf Course in Urbana, open for lunch 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. with sandwiches, fresh seafood, and pasta, open Sundays at 11 a.m. for Sunday brunch. Reservations can be made at 384-8111. And we have support for today's broadcast from 40 North, 88 West, presenting the 9th Annual Boneyard Arts Festival, April 7th through the 10th. With venues throughout the county, the festival, in conjunction with the local business community, is a celebration of music, dance, arts, culture, and theater. Information on this year's festival is at 40north.org. I'm Kevin Kelly for Live and Local, coming up in just a couple of minutes. Conversation with conductor Steven Larson, who's music director of the Champaign-Urbana Symphony Orchestra. They're performing at the Krannert Center in Urbana Saturday night. It's the third movement, part of the third movement from the Ninth Symphony of Antonin Dvorak, nicknamed the New World Symphony, or From the New World, and a performance here by the Philadelphia Orchestra, conducted by Wolfgang Sawallisch. You can hear a performance by the Champaign-Urbana Symphony Orchestra on Saturday evening at 7:30, and by, in combination, the East Central Illinois Youth Orchestra, all conducted by Maestro Steven Larson, who is music director of the CU Symphony, and he's with us right now here on Live and Local. Thanks for coming in.
Good afternoon.
And so you had string rehearsal on Monday night, and first full orchestra rehearsal, full and then some.
Full and then some, 125 or something like that. But who's counting? Players in the orchestra rehearsal room. It was very loud. But remarkably good. I mean, it was really the kids play extremely well, and they fit in with the CU Symphony players very nicely. And I was really, really delighted. I'm going to be even more delighted when we get out of that room onto the stage.
Yeah, on Saturday, not till Saturday morning, though.
Right,
yeah. Yeah, save your... Do you have to wear earplugs?
You know, I was going to, and I didn't. I thought maybe... Well, you know,
maybe
there are problems
Friday.
In wearing earplugs, certainly when you're conducting.
Yeah.
But I kept asking them to play softer.
So it's billed as a side-by-side performance, which in this case is literally true, or the
Literally true.
Symphony player
literally
next to
sitting next to each. We've sort of split our string players, for instance, and you know, normally string players sit in two players to a desk. And inside and outside, and we've literally split them in half. And the inside players now have just moved back and become the outside players, and all of the youth orchestra people become the inside players. And then in the wind and the brass section, they are sitting alongside the regular players and mixing things up there. And
so that's got to be a bit of a psychological adjustment for the folks in your orchestra who you normally play on the inside. They can't hide.
No.
They actually have to lead.
But they might get spoiled not having to turn pages, though.
I told my kids that. I said, now, all you folks who are not used to turning pages, you got to turn pages. And all of those who are supposed to be turning pages, you really better turn the page.
Yeah, because among string players, it's always, you know, after bowings, which string players will always argue about, turning pages at the wrong time or not quickly enough, or that's always an issue. People grouse about that. So I haven't heard anything yet. I think they're getting along just fine.
Glad to hear it. And do the CU Symphony people seem to have a good attitude toward the whole thing? Are they taking the mentorship thing?
Wonderfully so. I watched some of the principal winds and brass, for instance, you know, pointing out things and helpful things to the players and you know, telling them, you know, you go ahead, you play the solo. No, go. It's, you know, having them do it, and you could see them freeze a little bit. You know, really? I'm going to play this all by myself. So there's, you know, a lot of good teaching going on, and I think everybody seemed to be very happy. Just the only, well, there isn't really a negative. Some of the principal brass players said, you know, well, you know, what are we supposed to do here? I mean, I know if we all play, it's going to be too loud. But do we just everybody play mezzo forte rather than fortissimo, or should we divide it up? I said, you know, I don't know. But just right now, I think you should all play, if you want to divide up a little bit so people can hear each other in different ways, go ahead and do that. And when we get to Saturday, we'll make final adjustments and decide. Well, maybe this section needs to be played by only three people rather than six. So we're just going to play it by ear, so to speak.
And you have to make some interesting concessions. I know we talked about this, a couple weeks ago. The youth orchestra has a tuba player playing in place of a third trombone because we don't have a third trombone. And we have this really fine tuba player who would otherwise have nothing to do for an hour on our concert later on. And so how did that work out?
You know, I kept listening for problems and I couldn't hear any. Worked out fine. We are very obsessed these days with doing things correctly and the way the composer wanted, and you know, getting down to even the nitpicking about this is the first piece that Dvorak apparently wrote for slide trombone. His early symphonies were all written for valve trombones, but beyond that, you know, 50 or 60 or 70 years ago, there wasn't this great need to be correct. There was the feeling like we're going to play the music even if we have to use a double bass player playing the third trombone part or something. the most important thing was just to do the music, to play the music, to get it out, and to have everybody perform. So I'm delighted he's getting to play something. He's probably learning a few things in the process.
I'm sure he is. Well, he's a very good player. Will Weckhorst. Since he's our one and only tuba player, he deserves special mention, I guess. So this is Champaign Urbana Symphony on Saturday night at 7:30 at the Krannert Center in Urbana. And I know you also have a soloist who is a very interesting character. Have you worked with him yet?
I haven't yet. He seems to be a very interesting character, at least his pictures.
Yeah.
And some of the internet clips indicate so. I've never worked with a violinist with a mohawk before, or I'm not sure what you call his hairstyle now. It's sort of a modified mohawk or something.
Well, it may depend on what he's wearing.
He might have shaved his
when
head.
When he turns
who
up.
Knows.
Yeah.
Han Bin. He is definitely edgy, shall we say, doing a lot of performance art things and conceptual performances. And I really don't know what to expect, except I hear he plays very, very well. Of course, that's the number one thing. I really don't care what he looks like, except that he's going to bring a little bit of attitude to the concert stage.
Well, if he appears in anything like any of the guises that I've seen, also in photos and videos, visual will be very, very noticeable. And how does that not distract, I wonder, from playing, no matter how good the playing may
be? That's
always
a good question. You know, then we go from there to, well, you know, why does the orchestra all dress in black so it doesn't distract the audience from listening to the music? But that's, of course, that's one of the problems that one of the raps that classical music gets, orchestral music has gotten, certainly in the last 20 or 30 years, is the lack of the visual component, the sheer visual boringness, at least compared to the other technology that's available. Having a soloist that is visually interesting, to use a fairly neutral word, could it be any different than what we've read about Paganini back in his heyday, or Liszt's performances? We certainly are. There's the idea of a performer as showman, show people, neutral term, I guess, gender neutral term, is not new. Nigel Kennedy, who became Kennedy, did some of that a few years ago. Go for it. If you don't like what you're seeing, close your eyes and listen.
Or the other way around.
Right. Yeah.
Well, since it's just funny that you mentioned Nigel Kennedy, because his is the recording that I pulled out of one of the pieces that Han Bin will be playing on the program, simply because he's one of these more interesting characters visually, or at least he makes quite a big deal, I'm told, about what he does on stage and so on. And here's a performance of at least the opening portion of the Pablo de Sarasate Zigeunerweisen, or Gypsy Airs. In this case, Kennedy is with the English Chamber Orchestra.
Yeah, before you play it, Kevin, one of the reasons I chose these two pieces, the Sarasate Carmen Fantasy and Zigeunerweisen, is because obviously you just look at his picture and say, okay, this is a different sort of performer. I said, let's do something a little different than just sort of the meat and potatoes concerto. My first idea for this concert, I want to do the Sibelius Violin Concerto. I thought, well, let's do something. I gave him the option, or his agent the option. Let's do two pieces, or even three pieces, or even four of shorter pieces that don't get performed that often on stage and so-called serious concerts, because they're not, you know, they're not heavy enough. They're not worthy to be called concertos. Neither of these pieces are concertos, of course. They're just pieces for solo violin and orchestra. But virtuoso works, both of them. And interesting that he chose two pieces that have that sort of the gypsy, the tie-in, the Carmen gypsy origins, and then, of course, the gypsy airs. I guess there's a little bit of Korean gypsy in him.
Well, Sarasate was one of those showmen violinists himself, wasn't he?
So I've read, yes. Yeah. He was one of the very flashy, lots of the left-hand pizzicato and these very kind of tricks. I don't think he broke the strings and like Paganini did and kept playing.
Well, we'll see what Han Bin does tonight.
Okay, so on to Zigeunerweisen.
Here's Kennedy, as he was billed at the time of this recording. I think he's gone back to Nigel Kennedy and the English Chamber Orchestra on Live and Local. Thank you. Well, there's just a bit of Nigel Kennedy playing the Tsigarnervisen of Pablo de Sarasate with the English Chamber Orchestra. You can hear Han Bin, the Korean-born violinist, play Saturday night at 7:30 with the Champaign-Urbana Symphony Orchestra, conducted by Stephen Larson, who's with us here on Live. And
we had to add a piece to the program, too.
Say that again?
We had to add a piece to the program because about 2 weeks ago his agent called and said, you know, he really doesn't want to play these two pieces back-to-back without a break. He needs like 5 minutes in between. Oh, God, now what are we going to do? They said, well, why don't you just move the overture, the Pacific 231, up? No, we're not doing Pacific 231 between these two romantic violin pieces. That's like kind of like, you know, a cream puff stuffed with liverwurst or something. It just doesn't work. So dug around. I thought, okay, what are we going to do? Let's go with the Gypsy Connection. So we're doing the overture that's to the Zigeuner Baron by Strauss, the Gypsy Baron. No musical connection whatsoever, but at least there's the.
But you got that, yeah.
Thematic.
Sure, why not?
Thing there.
Brilliant bit of programming there, Steve. Really fine. No, I mean that's what you got to do. Arthur Onegger, Pacific 231. It's got something to do with the train, doesn't it?
Well, it's a stunning depiction of a Pacific-class locomotive, and any train buff knows that the 231 refers to the drive, the configuration of the wheels, just how they keep track of those things. It's a stunning tone poem. It's a very unromantic consideration of a steam locomotive. And I said to the orchestra, you know, how many people have actually been up close to a big steam locomotive? And very few people raised their hands. I said, it's absolutely terrifying. You know, this big, enormous black thing with these 5-foot wheels and the heat coming. You can feel the heat 20 feet away just coming off them.
And the noise and the smoke.
And then when it starts, the noise and the it's astonishing. It's really frightening. The power, it's almost like a dinosaur when you actually see one up close. And except from the very beginning where he uses little sound effect things, you know, just, you know, the bridge, you know, scraping on the bridge of the violins as the locomotive gets started. It's all music. I mean, he really, really faithfully depicts the sounds of this locomotive as it picks up speed and gets to its cruising speed and finally comes to a halt at the end in surely musical terms, you know, without any trying to reproduce the sounds, the particular sounds of the locomotive. And it's, like I said, it's very unromantic. As a matter of fact, it is the piece is a little intimidating. I don't expect people are going to be walking out whistling tunes from it or thinking, gee, that's a pleasant piece. I'd like to listen to that before I go to bed.
Will you introduce it at all and, you know, sort of say
yes,
this is what it's about?
Yeah.
Otherwise, they'll be just bewildered, I imagine.
Well, if they read the program notes, they'll probably be fine. If they don't read the program notes, they might be running for the exits.
Which you don't want them to do after the first four-minute piece.
It's a brilliant piece. It's brilliantly scored for the orchestra. And interestingly, the tempo of the piece never really changes from beginning to end. It seems to change. It seems to start faster. And, you know, start slow and get faster and faster and slow down. But the beat really never substantially changes.
So it's just the way he's
increased
the activity.
It's just the metric modulation, mm-hmm. the changing of the gears, so to speak, as it begins to pick up speed and the rhythms change. And it's really a neat piece.
Well, folks will have to go to the concert on Saturday to get a whiff of that one. It's the Pacific 231 by Arthur Onegger with the Champaign-Urbana Symphony Saturday night. And that's on the program, and music by Sarasate with Han Bin, the violinist, and Johann Strauss Jr., and Antonin Dvorak, New World Symphony. Steve Larson, thanks for joining us on the show.
Thank you.
Always a pleasure. And I have a minute here maybe to share a few of the things going on in our area. We'll just stick with today's calendar. St. Petersburg Philharmonic Orchestra from Russia with cellist Elisa Weilerstein will be at the Krannert Center tonight at 7:30. Tenor Matthew Polanzani is at the Dowden Fine Arts Center in Charleston tonight at 7:30. The Decatur Youth Symphony, no, that was this morning. We'll leave that go. Dido and Aeneas of Purcell and Bach's Coffee Cantata are at Illinois Wesleyan University tonight and then through the weekend as well. It's the musical at Millikan University called Golden Gate at the Albert Taylor Theater. That's tonight at 7:30. The Miracle Worker, put on by Class Act in Champaign, is tonight at 7 through Saturday with Sunday matinee at 2 o'clock. And Zach May and the Maps are joined by the Grandkids and the Mean Lids at the Canopy Club in Urbana tonight at 10:30. That's just, those are just a few of the things going on in our area. Hope you can get out to hear some of them. And on tomorrow's show, we will be broadcasting live from the Orpheum Theater in downtown Champaign, from the Downtown Champaign Chamber Music Festival, the Docha Festival, and the young people's program there called Wolfgang Amadeus Schmutzenberry. That's starting at noon. Tomorrow, I'll be with you live and pleased to narrate that program. You're listening to Illinois Public Media, WYNL FM and HD1 and HD2 Urbana, with translators W266 AF Urbana and W293 AF Danville. WYNL is a member-supported service of the College of Media at Illinois. We have support not only from our listeners, the friends of WYLL, but also from the Corkscrew Wine Emporium, 203 North Vine, Urbana, with wines, beers, and spirits for the serious collector to the first-time buyer. Wine tastings are held on Saturdays from 2 to 6 p.m. in the Bouvon Wine Bar. More information is at thecorkscrew.com. It's going to be a partly sunny afternoon. Our high is expected to be around 52 degrees, currently at 47. Tonight, mostly cloudy with a chance of light rain after midnight, low 35. And tomorrow, cloudy day, chance of light rain, high 52.